I know for 48 years now, Mr. Armstrong and this church has been writing in the plain truth and speaking on radio and television about the coming of the end of this age. And today we're a lot closer than when Mr. Armstrong began in 1934. In fact, if we look at events today, it certainly is far more real than what he was when he was preaching in 1934. And I would like to take the time today to go through some of the things of where we are in prophecy. I think it's important that we take a look and see where we are today in prophecy and how so much and so many things have been even already fulfilled and are very close to being completed, very, very close to being completed. When you look at prophecy, or in the age of prophecy, generally most people who are living during the time that is being fulfilled are the ones who fail to see that it's happening. You know, hindsight is 20/20 vision, isn't it? But when you're living during the age that is actually happening, sometimes people are so close to the forest they fail to see the trees. I think it's important that we do not let ourselves get into that situation, but that we be able to look and recognize really just where we are in relation to Bible prophecy, time-wise. Because we can go on living year in and year out and carrying on our business and our personal lives and so on, and we can begin to lose or begin to think, well, it's just never going to come. It's way down the road. It's a long ways off. And that can be very dangerous to let ourselves get into that kind of condition. So let's go through some things today here in prophecy and just see where we really do stand. There are some very important things happening in the world today and even in this last week. I want to begin by turning to Matthew, the 24th chapter, where the Olivet prophecy is, and that is the beginning, of course, of all prophecy, where anyone should start if they're going to begin with prophecy would be with Christ's Olivet prophecy. In Matthew 24, we see in verse 3, and as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of your coming, and of the end of the age, not the end of the world?" When Jesus answered, he said to them, "Take heed that no man deceive you," because apparently some could do that. Some have done that, in fact, in the last 10 years. "For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. That I'm a Christian, that I'm a minister of God, and shall deceive many." And we've had ministers in this church who have deceived many and taken many out, claiming that they were of Christ. "And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, and see that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet." The end is not yet. Now, some people look at this and they say, well, hasn't it been that way for all of time? And that's correct, it has been. The difference is that he's talking about a time when it would increase and be worse than it had been in the previous time of man on this earth. Verse 7, "For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famine, pestilence, earthquakes in various places, but again in greater amount and intensity than what has gone on in man's previous history. All these are the beginning of sorrows." All of that is the beginning. And we see that more clearly today than when Mr. Armstrong preached this and wrote about it in 1934. Some things I'm going to get into later on concerning the rise of political powers in Europe. If you ever had a chance to see the copy of the first Plain Truth magazine, February 1934, as I recall, I did see it, I believe the leading article was on Who is the Beast? And today, we'll be able to see 48 years later more clearly even than when Mr. Armstrong wrote that 48 years ago. And that's right, it's only going to be another 2 years and it'll be the 50th anniversary of the Plain Truth and the World Tomorrow broadcast. Of course, verse 14, he said that this gospel must be preached of the kingdom, must be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. And of course, that's exactly what we're doing. And verse 22, "And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved or saved alive. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." They shall be shortened. Now, I'd like to bring us a little bit up to date of what has been going on here in the world. The last 50 years since Mr. Armstrong began this preaching, he began with the Olivet prophecy. They also begin to talk about the things that have happened in the last 50 years. A lot of us sometimes take for granted the technology, the science, the developments that we have, and yet all of that was prophesied as part of the end time. We see that man has the technology to send probes to Mars, to put men on the moon, to develop sophisticated computers, to do incredible things of that nature, and none of that existed before World War II. And when Mr. Armstrong first began to preach these things, there was none of that type of thing around. Yet in Daniel, the 12th chapter, let's take a look here, Daniel, the 12th chapter. You know the Virginia Slim cigarette commercial? You see it on billboards now. You've come a long way, baby. Well, you have to take a look at some of the things that has happened in the last 48 years, or since World War II. Daniel, the 12th chapter, in verse 4, he said, "But you, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." What kind of knowledge? Knowledge of secular things. Knowledge of technology, the knowledge of science, certainly not the knowledge of the truth of God's Word. That has not really been increased. But we live in a time, and if we look just in the last 48 years, even the things of this nature, it is really incredible, because man has grown in this type of knowledge more since World War II than in all of the rest of his experience on this earth combined. And we sometimes just never stop to think about that. Of course, with the nuclear weapons and the missiles and everything, we hear about that all the time. But you take for granted, you have a refrigerator. You have an electric range or gas range. You have a microwave. You have a television set in color. You have an automobile. You just take that for granted as a way of life. We do not stop to realize how much technology, even since World War II, has increased to where we have these luxuries. You all have a stereo system, and some more sophisticated than others, and so on. Now the big in thing is the videotape recorders and all of that. We take it for granted, don't we? Those are very incredible inventions. Tape recorders sitting over here taping me today. We take it for granted. You have a library full of cassette tapes downstairs. All of that since World War II. When did the cassette tape come out? You know, the increase of knowledge, we take it for granted, all these things. We don't even stop to realize how much knowledge and how much, not only knowledge, but knowledge being put into material things that we have that just comes out all the time, year after year. What an incredible age that we are living in. And yet, despite the fact that we have such an increase of knowledge, we have such a lack of spiritual knowledge. A lack of spiritual knowledge in this country. Notice Hosea chapter 4. In Hosea, the fourth chapter, when Mr. Armstrong began to preach years and years ago, he began to talk about these things. You know, I thought back on it when I was preparing this. I gave the sermon quite a while back, but there's some things here that I wanted to pass on and give to you today that I thought was very relevant when I gave this before, the East Church. When I was preparing it, I remember thinking that, well, you know, when Mr. Armstrong was preaching and writing in the Plain Truth magazine in 1934, and using Daniel 12:4 and using Hosea 4 here in verse 6 that I'm going to read, and he thought things were pretty bad then. Now look at it almost 50 years later, and yet a lot of times people in the last 10 years in the church couldn't see that. They became so blinded, they were just like the person so close to the forest they couldn't see the trees. Some think, well, you know, the end may come 300 years from now, one person said. Maybe 100 years. Who knows? In other words, it wasn't real close to them. It wasn't very real. Is it very real to you? Well, I hope by the end of this sermon, we're going to begin to see how real it is, how real the time we are living in is. In Hosea chapter 4 and verse 6, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you, that you shall be no priest to me. Seeing that you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. And as they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame." In other words, you have an irony here. Tremendous increase of secular knowledge and technology, yet a total decrease of spiritual knowledge and the things that really do count. If you look around today, well, just look at how many divorces we have. Obviously, people are not putting God into the marriage. What do we have? Maybe 1 out of 2. 1 out of 3 is the national. 1 out of 2 is the average in some of the major cities as far as divorces. We have so many live-ins today. and even a lot of our young people in the church who wanted to get involved in living in all this time with somebody outside of marriage. And really has an influence upon even young people growing up in the church. This world does. I think the sermonette mentioned overcoming Satan, the world, as well as ourselves. But where is the spiritual knowledge? Obviously, a lot of young men and women are not following any of that spiritual knowledge. They must not have it. They're living the lifestyles that they're living today. And then, of course, the churches are not teaching anything of the truth in this land. Teaching people it's okay to disobey God's law. You don't have to keep the Sabbath. You don't have to keep any of the commandments. You can keep all of these pagan holidays, but don't keep any of the days that God said to keep. Surely you don't want to do that, right? They don't want to teach the doctrines and commandments, just love. Very, very unfortunate that people think that love is just being friendly and nice to your neighbor, that it isn't a matter of service and obedience to God. First John 5:3, the love of God is to keep his commandments. So we look at Israel today, and it's gotten worse, because, you know, back in 1934, more people were sticking their noses into the Bible. More people grew up in a more conservative, biblically-oriented family. Now, they may not have known the truth about the Sabbath, the holy days, and all of that, but what they did understand, they stuck to it in a much more concerted way. They held to their marriage vows. It would have been a shame to do as going on today, of, you know, just living with somebody out of wedlock, all of these things, and much, much more. So, you know, we have come a long ways, haven't we? We've come a long ways down when it comes to religion. We've come a long ways up when it comes to science and technology. Now, we are in the time of the end. Sometimes we need to stop and really think about these things so we can understand and see it. But I'd like to go on now beyond just that, and that is into us as a nation. And into the nation of Israel. I think most of you already know that the United States is one of the nations of Israel today. And if you haven't read Mr. Armstrong's book on the United States and British nations in prophecy, please get your copy of it. It's free, and read it. I think you'll find it very, very informative. In Isaiah chapter 1, we begin to see how some of this applies to the modern nation of Israel, where we stand today as a nation. Some of this may be just reviewed to you, but I think we need to look and realize what's happening, because he said he's going to punish his people for a lack of spiritual knowledge and because they have turned away from God. He is going to punish them. Now notice here in Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 21, how has the faithful city become a harlot? Now he's writing to Israel. Isaiah is writing here to his people in Jerusalem, and Jerusalem was the faithful city. It was the capital of the nation. Now, look at Washington, D.C., the capital of one of the nations of Israel today. Has it not become a harlot? And as a harlot, does it not lead almost, well, Miami is now ahead of it, but it was for a while leading in murder and crime of this nature, but Miami now is, since we let everybody come in that shouldn't have come in and has totally overrun that city, Miami now leads it. But for a capital to be the model of a nation, and exemplifying some of the character of the nation when visitors come, look at Washington. Filled just like the harlot, become as a harlot. It was full of judgment and righteousness lodged in it, but now murderers. It's one of the leading cities in this country as far as in murders. Your silver has become gross and your wine mixed with water. Your princes are rebellious and companions of thieves. Your leaders are your princes, is what he's saying. Now, he was writing this anciently, but it was dual. The first three chapters of Isaiah are talking to Israel. He is using what was happening presently in his life with that nation, and he was saying it in a sense because it was dual when it happened again. And as you read through those three chapters, first three chapters of Isaiah, that becomes apparent to you, that he's not just talking only about Israel in the days of Isaiah. He's talking about Israel at the time of the end. Says your princes, your leaders, are rebellious and companions of thieves, and everyone loves gifts, that is, bribes. What's happened in the last 10 years? Now, you've known it's going on for a long time, but now that's being caught and it's making the news and everything else. Look at Afghan. Do they love gifts? Now, they claim entrapment, but why did they take it? Except they love gifts. Those people, what are the seven representatives, one senator, And they claim, well, the FBI overstepped its bounds, and that's entrapment. Yes, but they loved the gift. They took it. Except one guy didn't, I guess. But the others, they actually took the money. So, they're companions of thieves. And everyone loves gifts and follows after rewards. And they judge not the fatherless, neither does the cause of the widow come unto them. They don't care about the people. They want the gift, the bride. They want to get ahead on the ladder. They don't really care about the people. They only want you to think they care about you when it's election time, so they can get reelected. Well, that's what we have for leadership today. It wasn't always that way in this country. It wasn't always that way. And to find some good leaders, they are in the minority today, not in the majority. When we stop and look and see where we're at, we need to realize we're very close to the time of the end. We're in the time of the end. And how long the time of the end is, I don't know. God reserves that to himself. But we are definitely in the time of the end, and I want you to be able to see and recognize that. Notice chapter 3 of Isaiah. Chapter 3 and verse 4 and 5. Looking at the condition of this country and where we have come in the last 48 years since Mr. Armstrong has begun preaching. Was he wrong? Some people have left the church thinking he was. Was he wrong? These things are more intense and more accurate today than 48 years ago when he went on the air. We should see that. Isaiah 3, verse 4 and 5, "And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them, and the people shall be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. The child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient, and the base against the honorable. No respect for the older people. Disrespect, dishonor." And then, of course, he says, because of that, babes will rule over them instead. And verse 12, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you cause you to err, and destroy the way of your paths." And sure enough, that's the way it is when we look around us today. Because he says, "O my people, they which lead you cause you to err." And we've seen a lot of that. Even the leaders of the religious leaders of the land cause his people Israel to err, to sin, to go, get off track. Just to show you a little bit more of the condition and the time, moreover, verse 16, "The Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, they walking, mincing as they go and making a tinkling with their feet, therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of their heads, of the heads of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will discover their secret parts." You know what he's talking about in King James language there? This sensual look. To be sexy. Sensual. You know, to... What's the in thing today? Wear your pants so tight you couldn't possibly be comfortable. Why? Because that's in. Why is it in? So that you turn on the other girls? No, so that the men will look at your hind ends. Put it plain, right? Sounds gross, doesn't it? But that's exactly what it's for. Don't stop to think about that, do we? But a lot of people grow up, well, I don't want to be different. Look at styles. You know, now we shouldn't be the type of people who, you know, are a century behind the times. On the other hand, we do not need to be so wrapped up into the world that we become just like the prophecies being fulfilled. God doesn't want us to be that type, and young ladies, wives, or whatever, we need to make sure we use discretion and not be like the world. And not have this kind of sensual, sexy look all the time. You can read the rest of that chapter because that's what it talks about going on, the way women would carry themselves about. Of course, you see it now. It goes clear over into Hollywood. It goes over into all the movies, television, as well as not only your styles of clothing and things of that nature. Well, that's just barely skimming the surface of where we are as a nation today. You stop and think a little bit. You can probably think of more things than I have even brought out here. But I want to go on, because what now is that going to lead to? What is God going to do to a nation that allows this to continue to come on? In Isaiah 10, let's just carry it on a little bit. In Isaiah 10, verse 5 and 6. He said, "O Assyrian, the rod of mine anger, and the staff in their hand is mine indignation. I will send him against an hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil and to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. And you know, anciently, the Assyrians were used to conquer the 10 nations of northern, the 10 tribes of northern Israel, of the nation of the northern, get it straight here, of the 10 nations of the 10 tribes, which would make up Israel in the north, or it was Judah in the south. But Assyria was the rod of God's anger. And he used them, and this is what I'm going to show you here as we go on, his duel. The time is coming that when a nation does not turn back to its God, he's going to fulfill that a second time. And it will happen twice. That was being preached 48 years ago. At the end of World War II, Armstrong said, when he could look around and he could see that Germany and Europe was lying in rubble, he said, now Germany will rise again. A lot of people laughed at that. Until about 10, 12 years later, they realized that Germany once again was the strongest nation in Europe. If you want to know who the Assyrians are, they are descendants of the German people are descendants of the Assyrians. Now, it's an interesting thing when you look at history. The Assyrian people were conquered in 612 by the Babylonians, 612 BC. They didn't just disappear off the map. That's what historians seem to think, the 10 tribes of Israel, they just disappeared off the map when the Assyrians had conquered them. You don't take several millions of people and just have them vanish off the face of the earth. But if you look at a map, you can see what happened to them. And it really isn't that difficult, because when the Babylonians were coming in from the south, anyone who realized they were going to be overrun, unless he was just plain stupid, would go out the back door. So if the Babylonians are coming in pushing from the south, which they were, the Assyrians and their captive Israelites took the back door, which would take them right into the Crimea of southern Russia. It's interesting when you study about the Scythians and the Sarmatians. From 600 B.C. up until about the 3rd and 4th century A.D., that you find, really, that those people are what was anciently Israelites and Assyrians. The Sarmatians make up today much of Eastern Europe, of your Slavic people, as well as your Germanic people of Germany and Austria. So if you want to find out where the Assyrians are basically your Germanic people and your Austrian people of today. But he says, I'm going to use them as the rod of my anger because of what Israel has done by turning away from God. In chapter 11, in verse 10. Chapter 11, in verse 10. In that day there shall be a root of Jesse, which shall stand for an ensign of the people, and to it shall the Gentiles seek, and his rest shall be glorious. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria and from Egypt and Paphos and Cush and Elam and Shinar and Hamath and from the isles of the sea. A point there to make out is that he's going to recover them the second time. Now we know that they were taken captive by the Assyrians once. And he says he's going to do it a second time and he's going to bring them out of that captivity a second time. Now those locations where they're taken captive to Assyria and Egypt, Paphos and so forth, Cush, areas of North Africa, Shinar, of course, areas of modern-day Iraq. Hamath is the area up in Lebanon. Areas that they will be scattered to as captives, taken there because they've turned away from the God who gave them everything that they had and gave them all the national blessings that they have. I'm turning to a couple other scriptures here in Isaiah before we go to some things in Daniel. In Isaiah chapter 31, looking again at the fact, I want to point this out to you, how important it is to understand that God is going to use an Assyrian. And we have been preaching this now since 1934, that watch Germany rise. And Mr. Armstrong understood and knew who the Assyrians were long before 1934, before we began to preach it. And then Germany did rise, and Hitler and so forth. And he thought for a while that that was the time of the end. And it was very near, especially when Rommel was coming across North Africa, headed for, of course, the Glorious Land. But the British stopped him. And then later, after the Germans were defeated, Mr. Armstrong realized that Germany must rise again, that they will rise again, because he knew who the Assyrians were. And he knew what God's word said, that if a nation turns away from its God, especially the nation of Israel, he's going to use the Assyrian, the rod of his anger, to destroy them at the time of the end. In Isaiah 31, verse 8 and 9, then shall the Assyrian fall with the sword, not of a mighty man, and the sword of a not of a mean man shall devour him. But he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited, and he shall pass over to his stronghold for fear, and his princes shall be afraid of the inside. Now, the inside is referring to Christ. And I mention here that these princes that are with him, that are ruling with him, of course, would be comparable to his 10 kings. And we're going to go to this thing of the beast, because the last head of the beast has 10 kings of Europe ruling with him. And here we see that this Assyrian that God is going to destroy with the ensign, which is Christ, when he comes, that he shall pass over his stronghold, maybe the Catholic Church, which is his stronghold, for fear, and his princes, the 10 kings that are with him, shall be afraid of the ensign, saith the Lord, whose fire is in Zion and his furnace in Jerusalem. So again, we see, when we look here, that at the time of the end, we need to watch for the Assyrian. It's interesting that the United States has developed all of its defenses with its huge missiles and everything designed and coded to hit targets in the Soviet Union. And I was watching a 5-part series on that by CBS News here some time back. And I thought at the time, yeah, it's very interesting. Everything is programmed to stop a Soviet attack or to retaliate. It seems as though they've never even remotely thought that it possibly could come from another source, from another country. Never seems to have crossed anybody's mind that the only one we have to defend ourselves against today is the Soviet Union, at least in the eyes of the leadership of this country. Talk about being caught off guard and by surprise. Now that's going to really catch some people off guard and by surprise. One other one here in Isaiah is chapter 27. Again, showing you at the time of the end that it is going to be the Assyrian that takes God's people Israel into captivity and destroys them. Because of their sins, God will use them for that reason and for that purpose. Isaiah 27, verse 13, and it shall come to pass in that day that the great trumpet shall be blown. What trumpet? Well, the last trumpet. Now, what's happening at the time of the last trumpet? And they shall come which were ready to perish in the land of Assyria, and the outcasts in the land of Egypt, and shall worship the Lord in the holy mount at Jerusalem, because Christ is going to bring them back. So when we begin to look at the time of the end, we need to look at the time of an Assyrian rising in power. And God is going to use such an Assyrian at that time to bring about a destruction on his people because they've turned their back on him. Now, with all of that in mind that I've brought you up to at this point, I want to turn to Daniel 7. You know, most people who write on prophecy, even all of your various Protestant people who write on prophecy, they recognize and they see here this thing of the 7 heads and the 10 horns and the 4 great beasts. They cannot figure out how the United States fits into it. Hal Lindsey, in his book, The Late Great Planet Earth, I believe it is, he writes about it. He says, look, in Europe, there's going to be 10 nations rise. He's right. He doesn't quite understand all the picture, though. He doesn't understand that the one who's going to lead the 10 nations will be an Assyrian. Now, when we get here to Daniel chapter 7, verse 3 through 8, we have, first of all, it talks about the 4 great nations, and there were 4 great beasts that came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. We know that was Babylon. Verse 5, the second, another beast was a second was like a bear, raised up itself on one side, and it had 3 ribs. Well, we know that this was the Medo-Persian Empire, and the 3 ribs it conquered was Lydia, Egypt, and Babylon. Then we get down to verse 6, and after this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard. Well, that became Greece at the end of that verse, and the beast had also 4 heads. A dominion was given to it. And of course, after Alexander the Great died, what happened? Well, his generals, there were 7 of them, fought it out. After a number of years, it came down to 4 who won out to divide Alexander's kingdom into 4 parts. Verse 7, after this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and had great iron teeth, and it devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. This one is different because it was resurrected 10 different times. And here we are down at the time of the end, because 9 resurrections have taken place. You can go back to Justinian in 554, resurrecting the Holy Roman Empire, Charlemagne in 800, Otto the Great, 962, Charles V, what, 1582 or whatever it was, Napoleon, you get down to the time of Hitler and Mussolini, and now you're waiting for the tenth horn. I won't turn to it, but the book of Revelation says that the tenth is going to be unlike the others before, because the tenth is not going to be by itself. The tenth is going to have 10 with him. 10 nations with him, says there in Revelation 17, about verse 9. They'll be with him for 1 hour. 10 nations, 10 kings will give their power to the beast for 1 hour, says there in the book of Revelation. When we look and see who this is, we're looking at an Assyrian who's going to be the leader of the 10th horn. Charlemagne was Frankish, Justinian. He was from the city of Istanbul. Charles V, he was Austrian, Habsburg. Napoleon was French. Otto the Great was German. Every time the Holy Roman Empire was resurrected in the last 2,000